This is Cuba in Focus for Thursday, April 30th, 2020, a monthly news magazine presenting issues and discussions not commonly found in the corporate media. We here at Cuba in Focus feel it's time to hear other voices. In today's program, reports out of Cuba and Washington, D.C. say the Cuban embassy in Washington, D.C. was assaulted overnight. Cuba continues international solidarity, sending teams of medical professionals throughout the world to help fight the coronavirus, as activists, medical professionals, academics, elected officials, and concerned citizens call for U.S.-Cuba-Canada cooperation in fighting the pandemic. We have an interview with Cheryl Labash of the National Network on Cuba, and we hear from esteemed professor, historian, and Cuba specialist Dr. Isaac Saney, co-chair of the Canadian Network on Cuba. We also present excerpts from an April 18th webinar entitled Worldwide Health Crisis Demands Solidarity, Not Sanctions, and we include remarks by Cuba's Canadian ambassador, Josefina Vidal. We begin as usual with some news notes, starting with reports by Margaret Gilpin and Hilda Hill of the Prensa Latina News Agency on the latest COVID-19 figures coming out of Cuba. With Margaret Gilpin, I'm Sally O'Brien. Stay tuned. Breaking news as of midday. During the dawn hours today, April 30th, 2020, an unknown individual fired a gun into the Cuban embassy in Washington, D.C., and has been detained. As reported by Granma and Radio Havana, Cuba, the incident began around 2 a.m. outside the embassy in northwest Washington. The D.C. Metropolitan Police arrived on site after neighbors reported hearing gunshots, officials said. Officers found the suspect with an assault rifle and detained him without further incident. Investigators believe the person may have been shooting at the embassy, although details of his possible motive remain unclear. The official website of the Cuban Ministry of Foreign Affairs reports that no staff members were injured, although the building was damaged. The gunman, who was not immediately identified, was arrested on charges of assault with the intent to kill, unregistered ammunition, possession of an unregistered firearm, and possession of a high-capacity magazine, Secret Service officials told the Washington Post. Metropolitan Police and U.S. Secret Service agents are currently investigating what happened, and as reported in the Cuban daily Granma, the Cuban government is awaiting news from U.S. authorities on the investigation, including the identity of the suspect and his motivations for the aggression. The State Department is aware of the event. As of press time, no further details were available.
As of yesterday, April 29th, the National Director of Epidemiology of the Cuban Ministry of Public Health, Dr. Francisco Duran, reported that there were 30 new cases of COVID-19, bringing the total of positive cases across the island to 1,467. During his daily press briefing, held Wednesday morning, Duran said that over the past 24 hours, up to 12 midnight Tuesday night, fortunately, there were no additional deaths of patients from the coronavirus. There are now a total of 58 people who have died from COVID in Cuba. To date, 617 patients have recovered, with an additional 42 released from the hospital during the day on Tuesday. From Havana, Hilda Hill of the Prensa Latina News Agency has more.
The Cuban people confronts a pandemic and enemy campaigns. Cuba and its healthcare professionals are cornerstones of international solidarity because, with their altruism and heroism, they destroy lives of campaigns to discredit their work, assured healthcare authorities. Deputy Minister of Public Health Marcia Coba specified that members of the international contingent of specialized doctors in disaster situations and serious epidemics, Henry Reeve, make up the 22 brigades which are working in 24 countries to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. She said these brigades join the 61 already working in the same number of countries as part of the historic medical cooperation program that Cuba selflessly offers as part of its internationalism and solidarity. All these brigades have been sent by decision of the Cuban government based on official requests and the analysis of the proposals, conditions, and actual possibilities without abandoning quality care and providing the necessary resources to the Cuban population. Despite the discredit campaigns and the manipulation of public opinion in the United States, these 2,030 healthcare professionals voluntarily traveled and have already attended over 5,500 patients in isolation areas, hospitals, and red zones, jeopardizing their own health and lives, she noted. In this cooperation, she pointed out, scientific exchange, training and counseling, exchange of action and treatment protocols have been taken into account, which is also a sign of collaboration. That cooperation, Cova said, established on the basis of the United Nations principles of complementariness among developing countries and compensation for the services provided, sharing expenses, and guaranteeing the full salary of Cuban personnel here in the country. All the countries to which Cuba provides this aid to fight against COVID-19 disease have assumed the transportation, accommodation, and food of the medical brigades in order to contribute to the sustainability of our healthcare services. In summary, about 1,450 Cuban health specialists have recently traveled to several countries to fight the novel SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus, a pandemic that is currently affecting the vast majority of nations. The most recent brigade arrived in South Africa last Sunday, made up of 217 healthcare professionals ready and scientifically trained to join in the fight. This is just one more reason to proudly celebrate May Day. Yes, not marching in squares or streets in traditional mass marches, but from our homes with the pride of contributing to preserve our revolution and with it the life of 11 million of courageous Cubans. The French association Cuba Linda has advocated for the awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize to the Cuban Medical Brigade's Henry Reeve, deployed in more than 20 countries for the fight against the COVID-19. The international community is witnessing the solidarity of health professionals who leave their country to provide services and share experiences in other parts of the world, which in the case of the pandemic caused by the new coronavirus even reached the heart of Europe, it specified in a statement to which Prensa Latina had access. According to the organization founded in 1998 to promote friendly ties with the island, the media cannot hide a gesture that comes as a surprise to many in Europe, but is well known in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, where thousands of doctors in Cuba have been saving lives since the first years of the triumph of the revolution on January 1, 1959.
That report from Hilda Hill in Havana.
A Cuban brigade of some 200 medical workers has arrived in South Africa to assist that country in their fight against the coronavirus. The healthcare professionals, all members of the Henry Reeve International Contingent specializing in disaster situations and serious epidemics, arrived in South Africa on Sunday.
The brigade includes doctors, epidemiologists, biostatisticians, health technology engineers, and biotechnology experts, all carefully selected to ensure knowledge in planning, execution, and management of clinical cases, as well as in the public health response to the pandemic, said the Cuban Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Cuba has sent 1,450 health specialists to 22 countries affected by the virus at the request of those governments, and some 29,000 of its professionals are joining the effort to combat the pandemic in 64 other nations where there are already intergovernmental health cooperation agreements.
Meanwhile, Cuba's Ministry of Public Health has confirmed that there are no cases of COVID-19 in any Cuban jail to date. The Interior Ministry, in charge of the country's prisons, has announced a series of preventive measures to ensure that it stays that way. They include
No one with fever or respiratory symptoms is permitted entrance, including workers and visitors, and the number of overall visitors has been limited.
Anyone entering a prison is required to properly wash their hands and then sanitize them and to wear masks.
Any new prisoner is quarantined for 15 days. All units have been supplied with alcohol and chlorine-based insecticides.
Any prisoner showing symptoms of illness is checked by medical personnel at least twice daily and then followed closely, and anyone with symptoms is put in isolation.
In addition, all homeopathic and medical remedies available to the general population are also readily available to prisoners.
In other news, according to the Latin American Herald Tribune, the first of two Delta Airlines planes repatriating Americans who were stranded in Cuba due to COVID-19 arrived last Friday at Miami International Airport. However, the U.S. Embassy noted that due to space restrictions, it was not possible to accommodate all of the Americans in Cuba who wished to return to the United States. An official statement said, quote, "Those who cannot be provided seats on these two flights will have to remain in Cuba until the airport reopens and the airlines operate normally again." According to data from the Cuban authorities, more than 5,000 non-resident foreigners still remain in Cuba at this time, in addition to some 7,000 Cuban immigrants.
And Cubans worldwide are calling for an end to the U.S. embargo. As reported by Prensa Latina, Cuban residents in more than 30 nations have united in a demand for Washington to end the U.S. blockade against the island. Citing Cuba's foreign ministry, the report said that last Sunday, dozens of Cuban associations worldwide issued statements, open letters to governments, petitions and signatures, and other initiatives denouncing the damages that the blockade has caused to their country of origin and their relatives on the island.
In related news, Andres Gomez, who heads up the Alianza Martiana organization in Miami, which represents a conglomerate of pro-Cuba organizations in Florida, announced that due to restrictions from Google, they will now have to reduce their habitual mailings to summaries every 3 days. Apparently, Google cited, quote, increased internet traffic during the pandemic as the cause for these new restrictions.
And finally, Cuba just opened their first bioelectric plant in the province of Ciego de Ávila. The plant delivers clean electricity and will process bagasse, that's sugarcane byproducts used for fuel, during the sugarcane harvest. The plant is in its final stage of testing before the harvest begins. When bagasse is out of season, the plant will process sickle bush to generate power to contribute to the national grid.
The plant, built with Chinese technology, is part of the Cuban plan to produce renewable energy. The plant, which cost $10 million, is slated to save 100,000 barrels of oil a year for the country and generate 50% of the power consumed by its home province.
As you heard in the first part of our program, Cuba is sending doctors worldwide to help in the fight against the coronavirus. In fact, Al Jazeera recently reported, quote, as confirmed cases of COVID-19 increase in countries around the world, so does the demand for Cuban medics. Now, as the U.S. count of confirmed cases reaches unparalleled numbers, with the national death toll increasing daily, many sectors of U.S. society are adding their voices to the call for medical cooperation with our closest neighbor to the south. Yesterday, more than 200 medical professionals, academics, elected officials, and concerned citizens endorsed a statement calling for medical, clinical, and scientific collaboration between the United States, Canada, and Cuba. The Saving Lives campaign was launched under the banner, "Why Not in the U.S. and Canada?" The campaign was officially launched April 29th by the U.S.-Cuba-Canada collaboration to fight COVID-19 and calls for incorporating Cuba's interferon alpha-2b recombinant in clinical trials and, quote, ending the attempts to stop other countries from accepting Cuban medical assistance and measures, preventing Cuba from importing medical equipment and medicines. Cheryl Labash is co-chair of the U.S.-based National Network on Cuba.
We see, especially in Black and poor communities, people dying, but yet the United States has not said, let's see what Cuba has to offer. That's the purpose of this campaign, to basically say, we need all the tools to fight the devastation of this virus. And one of those tools that has shown that it does tremendous life-saving around the world historically is Cuban medicine and Cuban expertise. So why not ask the Cubans to help in some way?
So this is basically a campaign. It's a grassroots campaign, but I see that you have some prestigious people who are in way in the mainstream when it comes to science and medicine and all of that. And can you share with us some of the people who have signed on to this campaign already?
Well, we certainly have many of the kind of expected progressive celebrities who have signed on to this campaign. But we've also had, I think it's now 20 doctors and epidemiologists and people who do infectious disease research. We specifically included them on the press release that we sent out because we want people to understand that this is not a left. It's really about using all the tools to save people's lives. There are medicines like the interferon alpha-2b recombinant that is used in novel ways by the Cuban medical establishment. There are a whole host of experiences that they can bring to our communities. I'm one of the co-chairs of the National Network on Cuba, and this was initiated along with the Canadian Network on Cuba. We've got this bi-country initiative, but I live in Detroit, which is primarily an African-American city. It became early one of the hotspots for COVID-19. When I looked at the statistics on April 21st, I compared the statistics in Detroit, a city of 670,000 people, with COVID statistics coming out of Cuba, where they do the reports every day, very detailed. And I found that with 6% of the population of Cuba, Detroit had 18 times the deaths. 18 times the deaths of the whole country of Cuba in a city like Detroit of 670,000 people. You can't help but ask yourself why. Mm-hmm. Why is it that Cuba can find the ways, and of course there are many answers to that, and the social system has a great deal to do with it, but also it is the way they managed the COVID crisis there from the beginning. But we need to learn from them. We need to know how they're treating COVID patients, what they're treating COVID patients with, and that's important. And it's something that's denied to us. It's denied to us in Detroit. It's denied all across the country. It's denied in Canada, where First Nations have asked for Cuban doctors to come. And the Canadian government has refused to give visas. This is something that needs to be brought to the public, that there are options that are being denied to us. Our medical professionals are being denied this expertise. One doctor in New York just committed suicide because of the stress of what she saw, people dying. Mm. So we cannot let this important tool go unchecked because someone in the federal government has an axe to grind about Cuba.
You talked about a partnership with Canada. Of course, Canada has a much better healthcare system than the United States. How is Canada dealing with Cuba and some of the medical advantages that Cuba could lend to the fight against COVID-19?
Well, even though Canada has had a different policy in general with Cuba, they also are reflecting the pressure from the United States, where when First Nations who have their own autonomy request Cuban assistance and Cuban medicine, the Cubans are denied visas.
Well, Cheryl Labosh, how can people help without being able to travel and all of that kind of thing? What can people do to find out more about this initiative and also to perhaps join it and help in the work?
Well, first, go to our website. We have a new website. The name is kind of long, but it's savinglives.us-cuba-normalization.org. And on that website, you can read our basic original statement. You have an opportunity to support that statement. You can take that statement to your organization, to your political representatives. You know, there's many things that you can do to build awareness and have people sign on to the campaign. We're just in the beginning stages. We encourage everybody to become active. We have weekly meetings of the campaign that include, of course, doctors. Many of the doctors who appear on this list of endorsers attend the meetings. We do them by Zoom. So if you want to become active, please contact us.
Once again, the contact would be savinglives.us-cubanormalization.org. savinglives.us-cubanormalization.org.
Cheryl Labosh is the co-chair of the National Network on Cuba, part of the U.S.-Cuba-Canada collaboration to fight COVID-19. A leading figure in this campaign from the Canadian side of the border is Dr. Isaac Saney, co-chair of the Canadian Network on Cuba. He's also a Cuban specialist and professor and senior instructor at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Canada. On April 9th, Dr. Saney was one of the featured speakers at a webinar entitled Cuba Leads the Global Fight Against COVID-19. In promoting the event, Dalhousie General Announcements website posted, "Now more than ever, the world needs true solidarity to fight and overcome COVID-19. One country that truly understands that and is helping to lead the charge is Cuba and its medical internationalism." During his presentation, Isaac Saney spoke about the prospects for a campaign to access Cuba's interferon alpha-2b recombinant and other medical assistance to treat COVID-19, a precursor to the Saving Lives campaign officially launched yesterday.
It's a pleasure to be here. And I see we've had at one point almost over 600 people attending this webinar. And I think basically to talk about a subject that we're all very concerned about. And what I want to talk about now is perhaps what, in a sense, was the crystallization of this webinar. It's not just simply our commitment to challenge disinformation about Cuba, to focus on Cuba's tremendous medical internationalism and solidarity to the world, which is an example that foreign relations don't have to be based on real politics, but can be based on true internationalism, solidarity, and social love. But also to talk about what we're dealing with in the midst of this global pandemic of COVID-19. As we know, in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have seen that in the case of the United States, it has been spiraling. And so right now we have over 450,000 cases in the United States, which represents 29.37% of the global total. The United States is now the epicenter of our COVID-19. The total number of US deaths are now over 15,000, nearly 16,000. And these are based on sort of a very regularly updated Johns Hopkins University figures, which represent 17% of the global deaths. We also know that there's a disproportionate impact on the most vulnerable, oppressed, and disenfranchised. We know at the front and center of these struggles are workers. We know that in a sense, this crisis has in many eyes restored the dignity of labor, because those jobs that perhaps were looked down upon, were denigrated, have now become essential to the operation and sustaining of our lives. People who work in grocery stores, people who do what normally were considered menial tasks. We've also seen that among African Americans, this crisis has been particularly disproportionate. For example, in Michigan, as you can see, 14% of the population is African-American, yet 33% of the cases are from the African-American community and 41% of the deaths. In the case of Louisiana, 32% of the population are African-Americans, yet they have 70% of the fatalities. And in Chicago, 72% of the deaths are African-Americans. This reflects the long history of disenfranchisement, marginalization, oppression, and the imposition of white supremacy, the functioning of anti-Black racism. But also among indigenous peoples in the United States, we see this also being reflected here in the Navajo Nation, which is located across three states in the United States. There are at least 384 confirmed cases and 15 deaths. And more than 76% of Navajo households suffer food insecurity. One of the things driving this, or what people call, driving this crisis of COVID in the African-American and the indigenous community, is what people often call the social determinants of health in terms of comorbidities, underlying conditions that come from lack of proper nutrition. In Canada, we also have a similar issue in the Black communities of Canada and also in the indigenous communities, what we call First Nations. There was a call from Grand Chief Jerry Daniels of the Southern Chiefs Organization, which represent the Anishinaabe and Dakota First Nations in Southern Manitoba, which is a province in Canada, basically for doctors from Cuba, not only because these doctors have the experience in COVID, but precisely as well because there are not enough doctors in Canada to provide the assistance they need. And they suffer from lack of proper housing, lack of running water, and a whole number of inequalities and inequities that make them particularly vulnerable to COVID-19. And so Chief Daniels, you can see in this quote, says quite clearly, Canada does not have enough healthcare workers to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 and to address the numbers of upcoming cases in First Nations communities. So as John Cook said at the end of his presentation, you know, perhaps Cuba's internationalism, its selfless solidarity and generosity to people, what the late great Norman Gervin called an unpayable debt, can be summed up in these three words uttered by José Martí, in many ways, the father of the Cuban nation. Patria es humanidad. In a sense, homeland is humanity. Humanity is homeland. And so this, in a sense, has provided us looking at this crisis that's unfolding in the United States and spiraling out of control for us to launch a campaign called U.S.-Cuba-Canada Collaboration in Fighting COVID-19. It is a call of the National Network on Cuba in the United States and the Canadian Network on Cuba. And our call is simply this. COVID-19 is ravaging the United States. Day by day, hour by hour, the infected and fatalities continue to spiral ever upward, with the most vulnerable communities, especially African Americans, disproportionately affected. The entire healthcare system is being strained beyond its capacity to provide adequate care and treatment, with doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers driven to exhaustion and beyond in their valiant efforts to save lives. A pandemic is by definition global. Surely, in the face of this worldwide menace, now is the time for international medical cooperation and solidarity. A time for joint efforts to confront COVID-19. A time to put political differences aside in order to save lives. It is for this reason that we are launching a campaign to call for medical collaboration with Cuba to gain access to Cuban medical expertise to assist in the fight against COVID-19. Many countries are now drawing on Cuba's expertise in fighting COVID-19. At the time of writing, Cuba has more than 800 medical personnel serving in 18 countries, including especially hard-hit Italy and Spain. In the coming days and weeks, more Cuban medical missions will be dispatched to other countries. These missions reflect Cuba's long history of medical internationalism. Many of the medical personnel now intimately involved in the fight against COVID-19 are part of the specially trained Henry Reeve International Medical Brigade against disasters and serious epidemics, which distinguished itself in the fight against the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Cuba also offers treatment regimens, some of which are not available in the United States and Canada. A key component of the protocols being used on the island and in the medical missions is Cuba's interferon alpha-2B recombinant. While Cuba's interferon is not a panacea, preliminary reports are promising, pointing to its efficacy in combination with other drugs in treating COVID-19. In a recently published extensive medical handbook by Zhejiang University School of Medicine in China on how to treat COVID-19, Cuba's interferon is a crucial component of the antiviral treatment to combat coronavirus. It is also used as a preventative measure to protect healthcare workers from contagion. At least 45 countries have sought to use Cuba's interferon alpha-2B recombinant for confronting the COVID-19 pandemic. We therefore call on the US and Canadian governments to lift restrictions on access to Cuban medical expertise, including the importation of Cuban interferon alpha-2B recombinant, in order to more effectively combat the COVID-19 pandemic. A precedent for this opening and cooperation has already been established by a joint venture facilitated by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo between Cuba's Center for Molecular Immunology and Buffalo's Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, which helped develop the CIMAMAC vaccine, the Cuban lung cancer vaccine. There was also the collaboration between medical personnel from Cuba and the University of Illinois on infant mortality in Chicago. This campaign will also benefit Canada, particularly Indigenous peoples and Black communities that are at the most risk from COVID-19. For example, the Canadian government has turned down the request for Cuban doctors by the Southern Chiefs organization representing the Anishinaabe and Dakota First Nations in Southern Manitoba. We call on people to join us and support us in this call for medical collaboration with Cuba. Cuban medical expertise can and will save lives. As Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez stated, humanity faces a common challenge. This pandemic does not respect borders or ideologies. It threatens the lives of all, and it is everyone's responsibility to address it. So we are specifically calling for, one, incorporating Cuba's interferon alpha-2B recombinant in clinical trials in the US and Canada. Two, US Food and Drug Administration approval for Cuba's interferon alpha-2 recombinant. And three, allowing US-Cuba-Canada medical collaboration. And finally, four, ending U.S. economic and travel sanctions against Cuba, including its extraterritorial nature and the attempts to stop all other countries accepting Cuban medical brigades. Please endorse this campaign. We have an email at interferon@us-cubanormalization.org. And you can use the statement, this call that we have developed, which will be put on our website, this letter, by sharing and sending it to medical personnel, unions, elected officials, community, faith-based, and political organizations. We believe that if we are successful in this campaign, not only will we save lives, not only will we stem the COVID-19 pandemic, but we will also contribute to making a better world possible. Thank you.
Dr. Isaac Saini, professor at Dalhousie University and co-chair of the Canadian Network on Cuba. And you're listening to Cuba in Focus over listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM, New York. We're streaming live and archived at www.wbai.org. And finally, we conclude our program with the gracious and insightful remarks of Cuba's ambassador to Canada, Josefina Vidal. Ambassador Vidal served as Cuba's lead negotiator in talks with the Barack Obama administration, which led to the reestablishment of diplomatic relations between our two countries. A leading Cuban diplomat, Vidal also served as Director General of the U.S. Division in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. She's introduced by Alison Bodine of the Movement for Social Justice in Vancouver, Canada.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's webinar, organized by a committee that has come together in order to plan for a U.S.-Cuba Normalization International Conference in New York City. Today, we have a webinar titled, The Worldwide Health Crisis Demands Solidarity, Not Sanctions, where we will spend some time together in order to explore how we can build our struggle together against cruel U.S. blockades and sanctions in the time of COVID-19, a time where the United States government is increasing their pressure on the government of Cuba through sanctions and blockades, as well as increasing their pressure against the government of Venezuela, while at the same time creating a disaster situation for poor working and oppressed people in the United States, especially when facing COVID-19. This webinar has come together, as I said, out of the U.S.-Cuba Normalization Conference, which was originally planned in New York City to take place at the end of March of this year. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, it's been rescheduled for November 14th and 15th in New York City. But in the interim, we are coming together as Cuba Solidarity activists from the National Network on Cuba and the Canadian Network on Cuba and other groups and individuals across the US and Canada in order to join in the fight and in the struggle for education around Cuba's leading example in the fight against COVID-19. To start off today, I am very honored to introduce the Cuban ambassador to Canada, Josefina Vidal. Josefina was also in charge of the negotiations between the United States and Cuba towards normalization that began under the Obama administration. And we are very honored to have her here with us today to bring her knowledge and her expertise and to start off the panel.
Thank you so much for the invitation. First of all, I wish that all panelists and those who are watching us today from all over, from Canada, from the US, from the rest of the world, are doing well. I would like to thank the organizers of the webinar in Canada and in the US for this wonderful idea, because it helps keep us together in these difficult and challenging times of the COVID-19 pandemic. Before I begin my brief presentation, I wish to commend the Canadian Network on Cuba and the US National Network on Cuba for the vigorous joint campaign that you decided to launch a week ago, calling for collaboration between Cuba, Canada, and the US in fighting COVID-19 and for the end of the US blockade against Cuba. To you and those who are supporting the campaign, I have to convey our deep gratitude on behalf of Cuba and the Cuban people. I want to mention on this occasion that our embassy last week made arrangements and articles about this campaign were published in the Cuban press, specifically in Cuba Debate and Prensa Latina. So many people in Cuba already know about this very important campaign. I would also like to take the opportunity to thank our friends in Canada, where I am posted representing the Cuban government, for other initiatives that they have launched in recent days. For example, the Canadian Network on Cuba campaign to support Cuba's contribution to the world, to the world's fight against COVID-19. There has been open letters and different statements by different organizations in solidarity with Cuba. For example, CCFA Toronto, La Table de Concertación y Solidarité Quebec Cuba, and different associations of Cubans who live in Canada, who have also addressed letters to high-level government officials in this country, asking them to raise their voices against the US blockade and work for its lifting. Every nation in the world is facing an unprecedented threat to its survival because of the COVID-19 pandemic. As the title of this webinar rightly says, this worldwide health crisis demands solidarity and not sanctions. My colleague, Ambassador Jose Cabañas, said last week at the first webinar of this kind that was organized that Cuba is facing now two pandemics at the same time, the COVID-19 and the US blockade. And he's totally right. I would just add that the latter, that is the blockade, could be considered even worse than the first one, the COVID-19, because it has lasted for almost 60 years now, and it has had a very negative impact on every single Cuban and on the whole functioning of the country and our relations with the outside world. As you are very well aware, the economic, financial, and commercial blockade imposed by the US government against Cuba has continued to intensify in a significant way in the last 2 years. Just between January 2019 and March this year, the United States government has implemented more than 90 measures targeting Cuba's financial transactions, the tourism industry, the energy sector, foreign investment, and medical cooperation programs in other countries. These measures by the United States are unprecedented by their level of aggressiveness and the scope. And they have been, these measures, deliberately aimed at depriving Cuba of sources of revenue to suffocate our economy. These measures have had a significant negative impact on the Cuban economy and have severely damaged the basic living conditions of the Cuban people. Due to the extraterritorial scope of the measures, they also affect Cuba's trade and external economic relations and financial relations with the rest of the world. And they have also been detrimental to the business interests and trade relations of different countries with Cuba, because many countries just fear falling afoul of US legislation. That's why, again, last year for the 28th consecutive time, the UN General Assembly overwhelmingly adopted the Cuban resolution that demands to put an end to the blockade imposed on Cuba. However, as you well know, the United States government continues ignoring this worldwide demand and has continued to tighten the sanctions against Cuba. The effects of the sanctions are felt even more now when Cuba is fighting a COVID-19 pandemic. The blockade has become a major impediment to purchase much needed medicines, equipment, and materials to deal with the pandemic, as well as to receiving and to providing international aid. For example, the blockade makes it impossible for Cuba to buy medical supplies and technologies that have more than 10% of American components. The restrictions imposed by the blockade on banks, on shipping companies, on airlines, to prevent them from having normal operations with Cuba, have impeded the arrival of medical supplies and donations to the country. Just recently was worldwide published in the news that a shipment of medical supplies made of masks, rapid diagnostic kits, and ventilators donated by the Alibaba Foundation of China could not arrive in Cuba because the airline that was contracted to do so refused to transport this important cargo to Cuba, arguing the existence of US sanctions. Fuel shortage is also a problem that affects the operation and the rapid response capacity of the Cuban health system, because as you know, the US has been putting lots of pressures on shipping companies, insurance companies, and ship owners to prevent them transporting oil to Cuba. Despite all these difficulties that we are confronting now, Cuba, as you know, has responded to requests for collaboration from 20 countries so far, mainly from Latin America and the Caribbean, but also from Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. In just a few weeks, Cuba has dispatched 21 contingents of the well-known Henry Reef Brigade to help these 20 countries in different regions in their fight against COVID-19. This brigade, as some people already know, is highly specialized in providing services in situations of natural disasters and pandemics. And I have to tell you, I would like to take the opportunity to announce to you that more brigades will be deployed to different countries in the near future. And so to the more than 1,000 doctors and nurses who are part of these 21 Henry Reef brigades, you have to add around 28,000 doctors who have been working in 60 countries before the pandemic was declared. So the medical personnel in those countries that have been there before the pandemic will also be helping local health authorities coping with COVID-19. During last week, I have to tell you that several video conferences have been conducted between experts from the Institute of Tropical Medicine in Cuba, with Cuban medical brigades in seven African countries and one Latin American country, to share with them information about specific treatment for patients so that they are ready to provide their services locally wherever they are. We have also shared some medicines produced by Cuba that, according to our practice, have proven effective in the prevention and the therapy against the disease. All these actions have been undertaken without neglecting our duty to protect the Cuban population. The Cuban government has mobilized all its limited resources to provide the necessary care to our people. So far, I think that Cuba has been doing a rather good job building on the strength of our health system, which, as you know, is based mainly on prevention. At the primary care level, family doctors, nurses, and students of medicine are going door to door to interview Cubans to detect any possible symptom of COVID-19. So we are actively looking for people with COVID and not waiting for people to go to the hospital when they are really sick. As soon as people are suspect of having COVID, or we detect contacts of people who have tested positive, they are all transferred to a special health facilities, and they begin receiving treatment right away with several medicaments that the Cuban biotech industry has developed. There is a clinical trial going on now with a group of suspects using a molecule that has been created by the Center of Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology in Havana. And this molecule improves the body innate immune response. So this is a very important clinical trial that is being conducted now, and will show results in a matter of time about the effectiveness of this treatment. In the case of people who are tested positive in Cuba, they are immediately hospitalized and treated with a combination of different drugs, including the Cuban interferon alpha-2B recombinant, some antiretrovirals, and other medicaments. And in the case of patients who are in a serious or critical condition, they receive also the Cuban interferon together with monoclonal antibodies that has been developed in Cuba too, and other drugs. And at this stage, there is another clinical trial which is underway in Cuba to scientifically validate the use of plasma with this group of very severely ill patients in a critical condition. As you can see, the Cuban scientific community has joined forces with our healthcare system to help patients with COVID. And in total, 19 medicaments produced by our biotech industry are being used now as part of the protocol to treat patients with COVID while a vaccine is discovered in the world. I take the opportunity to mention that Cuba is one of the more than 60 countries that the World Health Organization announced the other day that it is doing some research on a vaccine. In summary, our prophylactic and therapeutic approach in Cuba is oriented at containing the spread as much as possible through preventive measures and treating all suspects and all contacts of positive cases from the very beginning to improve their response to the virus. and at the last stage to treat positive cases with several medicaments to try to prevent their health condition from worsening and becoming seriously or critically ill. I listened today to the press conference that the head of epidemiology in Cuba every day for Cuban people. It seems that the treatment and the strategy that we are using is producing some results so far, although it has to be improving scientifically, because so far it is helping Cuba to keep a low mortality rate of 3.2% when you compare it with the global mortality rate, which is almost 6.9% now. The U.S. blockade against Cuba, which, as you know, is the most unfair, severe, and prolonged system of unilateral sanctions ever applied against any country, was never justified. But now, at the times of a pandemic, is less justified when we all have to fight together this major threat that we are facing. As the UN General Assembly has shown consistently, the U.S. blockade against Cuba is illegal, but it's also politically and morally unacceptable. In recent days, there have been many voices that have been raised condemning the U.S. blockade, from the UN Secretary General to the UN High Commissioner on Human Rights, to the Pope, several foreign governments, non-governmental organizations, among others. They all have been demanding an end to armed conflicts and at the same time, the suspension of unilateral coercive measures, because this is the right thing to do for humanitarian reasons, particularly now in times of a pandemic. In this exceptional situation in which we are living now, which require that we set aside all political differences, that we all work and together and collaborate to overcome this big challenge that arises from the current pandemic. I take the opportunity to appreciate your support, and we ask for your support to do everything possible to raise the awareness about the negative impact that this U.S. blockade has on Cuba and its people, and to work together with us to put an end to this very strict regime of sanctions against Cuba. Once again, on behalf of the Cuban government and of the people of Cuba, I would like to reiterate my deep appreciation to you all and to the rest of compañeros from the World Solidarity Movement for your friendship and for your support to Cuba, as well as to convey our sincere wishes that you remain healthy and safe in these challenging and very difficult times. And I want to, just to finish, remind everyone that a day like today, tomorrow, 59 years ago, on the beaches of Playa Girón, in the Bay of Pigs, Cuba defeated a mercenary brigade armed and supported by the United States government. And we are confident that as we did 59 years ago, as we have done many more times after that, we are very much confident that we will resist once again. And with your support, we will overcome this very difficult situation.
Cuban Ambassador to Canada, Josefina Vidal, was speaking April 18th at a Solidarity Not Sanctions webinar hosted by the Organizing Committee of an International Conference for the Normalization of U.S.-Cuba Relations, New York, New Jersey, Cuba Sea Coalition. Thank you for listening to Cuba in Focus. We welcome your comments. Our email address is cubainfocus@gmail.com. This program was produced by Sally O'Brien with Margaret Gilpin. Thanks to Hilda Hill of the Prensa Latina News Agency in Havana and to our engineer, Max Schmid. With Margaret Gilpin, I'm Sally O'Brien for Cuba in Focus.
Sueña talismán querido, sueña mi abeja y su edad, sueña y si lo he merecido.